the UCR Podcast.
Engines of Demolition, that sounds like a very Black Label Society kind of album title, and as it happens, it is the title for the new record from Zakk Wylde and Black Label. That album is set to arrive March 27th. Zakk joins us to talk about the record as well as his current tour, which finds him doing double duty with both Black Label Society and his awesome tribute band, Zakk Sabbath. We talk Sabbath, his experience writing with Ozzy, the tribute that he pays to the boss, as he calls the Ozman, on his new album, and I think there even is a Manfred Mann reference in there somewhere. Only Zakk. It's Matt Wardlaw. You are listening to the UCR Podcast. Do us a favor. Take a moment and rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening. I've done it for other podcasts. It's quick and it helps a lot. We appreciate it. For all things Zakk Wylde related, you can go to ZakkWylde.com and BlackLabelSociety.com. Of course, we've written a ton about Zakk over the years in the digital pages of Ultimate Classic Rock, so don't miss your chance to go down that rabbit hole, be it Zakk Wylde, Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, whatever it is, we have you covered. And do not miss your chance to see the incredible double bill of Zakk Sabbath and Black Label Society. It's just my opinion, but I feel like every concert experience should start with some Sabbath. Here is our conversation with the great Zakk Wylde. Engines of Demolition, new Black Label album fans have heard a good stack of songs at this point. And Zakk, I love the way Name and Blood opens up the record. Some albums, as you know, you come out, you hit them hard. And I like the way instead we hear a relatively stark bit of guitar with the hiss of the amps in those opening moments instead. It really kind of sets the stage for this album in a cool way. So talk about how that one came together.
Well, the whole point of that intro is that hopefully everyone will think it's Blinded by the Light by Manfred Mann. And they'll go, I am sticking around to hear the rest of this. That's the whole point. You just bring them in and you just got to try and get them in. And that's the whole thing. And then probably as soon as they hear the riff come in, they'll go, get me out of here. I've had enough. Yeah, but hopefully some of them will stick around.
It worked for me, man. I stuck around. And you obviously know, man, how important like album openers and how important it is to kind of like draw them in with something like that. So, I mean, I imagine you have a lot of records like that you love.
You know,
you're
talking about album openers, which I think is kind of crazy. I mean, I love the song because obviously if we're going to do the next, you know, being in Zakk Sabbath, volume 4 would be the next, you know, album that we'll cover. And the best was when we did the first album, it said Zakk Sabbath performs the Black Sabbath debut album in its entirety. And the review was, why? That was just the best. But no, I remember, but like on volume 4, they open up with Wheels of Confusion, which I think is awesome. I love that song. But you would figure maybe they would open up with Supernaut because it's such an upbeat, amazing, you know, because that's how we usually open up the Zakk Sabbath shows with Supernaut. One of the greatest riffs ever written, and it's up. So you figure they would start with that, not a mid-tempo song. But I mean, I'm not complaining because I mean, I love Wheels of Confusion. So, but like you said, as far as an opener, you would just figure, just, you know, it is interesting. I mean, obviously Miracle Man on No Rest for No Rest. I mean, I thought that was great. You know, or Bark at the Moon. You know, it's a great opener. I'm just saying because it's, you know, you open a show with it. You know what I mean?
But what you're saying also is that, like, there's a good tactic to, like, taking the opposite route from what they're expecting. That's fun.
Yeah. I dig it. There is no right or wrong at the end of the day. It's whatever. It's preference.
I know this album's been taking shape for a good while now. What do you think was feeding the material where you were writing for this record overall?
I mean, usually, I mean, whenever we do Black Label albums, it's always an implosion of ideas and then we're done. You know what I mean? Because we don't demo songs. I mean, it's just like, I just always figured you write it and then you're done. You know, you don't sit back and listen to it. Because once it's done, it's done. You know, and usually when I'm writing a song, I'll sit right from beginning to end. And I'll write the riff, you know, Stillborn, Suicide, Messiah, whatever it is. And it's just like, you write beginning, middle, and the end. And we're, you know, or if you want to do a mid-tempo change, like a Sabbath-y thing where we change the tempo. You know, you get to that point, then you change. We'll go fast here or mid-tempo, something slow and heavy or whatever. But Yeah, so it's usually an implosion of ideas, and the fellows will go home from the Vatican, and then I'll, you know, me and Adam will do the, I'll come up with some melodies, write the lyrics in the truck, me and Dario finish the solos, and then we mix it, box it up, and ship it off. The donuts are done. And then, but this one, it was like in 2022, the guys came out, we knocked out a whole bunch of ideas, then went out with Pantera Celebration for a year, came back, went out for another year, came back, wrote some more. Then the fellas, you know, then we went back out for another year and a half. So we were almost out for 4 years. So when the guys came, I was like, I told Barbara, I said, babe, have the fellas come back out to the Vatican. I got a bunch of new things I wrote in the room, you know, just because now those songs are like 3 years old. So, you know, you kind of like, let me write a couple new ones. So, anyways, yeah, just wrote a bunch of new ones, kind of like Hand to Tomorrow's Grave ended up on there, Gatherer of Souls. Obviously, the lyrics in Ozzy's song, that was obviously after Oz passed away is when I wrote those things. So, yeah. I mean, there's a batch of new things that wouldn't have made it. I mean, Gallows is over a year and a half, you know, when we put the video out for that thing. So, I mean, actually, in that regard, I really kind of like putting a song out, dropping singles every couple months, every 3 months or so. And this way everybody gets a chance to digest the album.
Yeah, it's fun for sure, Zach. And also it's kind of interesting because you hear stuff like Gallows and, you know, the songs, the first couple of songs that you put out kind of give you a certain expectation. And then you hear like Name and Blood, and it's like, I love like the beautifully melodic feel of some of the guitar parts and the soloing that you and Dario are trading off on. Like, that's got some really interesting stuff that I, you know, I think that people that feel like they know what they're going to get from a Black Label record, you hear like the guitar work on that alone. And also I would say Lord Humongous. And it's like, there's some different things happening with this record.
Well, I dig it. I mean, to me, it's just the next, you know, of all the Black Label albums, what's so special about this one? It's the next one. You know, I mean, it's just, it's kind of like, you know, when you look at all the bands that we love or whatever, artists or whatever, it's like if Zeppelin would have been there already, they would have put Stairway to Heaven on the first album. They weren't there yet. You know, why didn't you put Whole Lotta Love on the first album? We weren't there yet. That came later on. Then it was just like, you know, why did you put Kashmir on the first album? It's like we weren't there. I'm just saying, you know, they just weren't there, you know. So it's like, you know, even with Ozzy, why didn't they put Over the Mountain on the first album? They're like, we weren't there yet. You know, it's like Randy's like, I came up with that riff after the first tour, you know. So that's what I'm saying. Every day is a blessing and every day is a gift, man. So, you know, you don't know where, you know, it's like when you're writing songs, it's like a bunch of Vikings. You go out and you don't know what land we're going to find, you know, or where we're going to end up, you know. So it's just like, but that's the fun of it. And that's the fun of making records, you know what I mean? Because otherwise, AC/DC, when Bond was still around, they would have wrote Hell's Bells and Back in Black. They would have had that music for them. They didn't. You know, because they had gotten up to heaven, and but they had the riff to Highway to Hell and all that stuff, you know, a whole lot of Rosie or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's like, they weren't there yet. So that's the whole thing. I mean, and that's the beauty of it. It's just like, all right, let's see where we end up next month.
Well, what you were talking about, how Zeppelin, really, it's the evolution of where they went record after record after record. And you can kind of trace that back to this current Black Label record, because it's almost like where you started with those initial songs and ideas, as you say, that you worked on, you know, close to 4 years ago or whatever it was, and where you wound up. It's almost like the benefit of time helped this record in the same way that the evolution of Zeppelin happened across several records.
Well, when they, because it was always interesting reading about it with Zeppelin, you know, when they did Zeppelin 4, how many songs, the implosion of creativity when they made that album. The Rover, Houses of the Holy, obviously, ended up on Physical Graffiti. And I mean, it's just like, there were so many songs from that session, from them working on Volume 4, on Zeppelin 4, that spread out over houses, made it on Houses of the Holy, and made songs that made it onto Physical Graffiti. From that song, that implosion of ideas spread out over three albums. You know, so yeah, I guess this would be kind of like that in regard of songs that, you know, because obviously you wrote them 4 years ago. You don't, it's like, it's old now. You're on to the next thing. I think if you ask any band or any Elton John, he'd be like, you want to use Rocket Man on this? He's like, bro, I wrote that 4 years ago. You know what I mean? It's just like, now he wrote, you know, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. You know, like that, he's excited about the new things he just wrote, you know? So I think that's like that with everybody.
We've mentioned Lord Humongous. It's just great driving road rock. Talk about that one from your perspective. Just what should we know about that song?
Well, yeah, it's just pedal to the floor kind of music when you're cruising. But I mean, it's just, well, like with the lyrics, once again, like the lyrics are always last to me. So I always have like the music, whether it's mellow, a piano thing, acoustic guitar, and then the lyrics are always last, and whether it's heavy or whatever. That's why I always say the lyrics can come from anywhere. It could be like something story you told me about you getting screwed over years ago or whatever, and I end up writing Better Days and Wiser Times about that, you know, and you're like, Zach, what's the song? I go, remember you told me about that buddy Frank that screwed you over? Where you go, oh, yeah, I go, that song's about that. And you're like, no way, you know what I mean? So it could be from that point of, you know, lyrics can come from that when I figure out what I want to write it about. But like Lord Humongous, it would be like if you just told me, you said, Zach, write a song about Mad Max, like a Wikipedia thing, about Mad Max. I mean, because bottom line is, let's be real, if I didn't call the song Lord Humongous, you might not have known it's about Lord Humongous and the, you know, the dogs of war. You know what I mean? So
sure.
But yeah, but that's just, you know, like when I wrote Crazy Horse, somebody was like, what's the song about? I go, it's about a horse. That's crazy. I go, it's about Crazy Horse, the Indian warrior chief. But, you know, if I wrote a short Wikipedia thing on, if you needed to know about Crazy Horse, you know, give me a description of him. You know what I mean? So, you know, the lyrics can come from that point of view too. Or just things that have come to you, or, you know, like Ozzy song. I wrote that. Obviously, I'm not writing those lyrics if Ozzy hadn't passed away, because I wrote it. It's just songs about him, you know, so, and my relationship with him. So, the lyrics are never ending, you know, as far as sources of, you know, you live and you breathe. So every day you could write a song of something that happens to me and you today. Could be used for lyrics later on down the road.
How much have you done the songwriting game kind of thing? You mentioned like starting with something like Mad Max, and there's games out there where songwriters will basically just throw out a word in an email. Everybody has to write a song based on that word or that title or whatever. How much have you done any of that kind of stuff over the years with songwriting?
I haven't, but I mean, I always think it's interesting when you hear like Bernie Taupin and Elton John, right?
Sure.
The whole thing with Elton and Bernie, right? And Elton goes, Bernie will write the lyrics and he'll send them to me. And he goes, I put them up on the piano and I just see the lyrics and it actually inspires me to write like writing music for a movie. And I was like, wow. Like that inspire. It's not like Elton has had the music sitting around for Rocket Man or I guess that's why they call it the blues or whatever, you know, where you had the music sitting around and then, you know, I wrote these lyrics and you used them and you were like, Zach, these lyrics fit perfect with this new thing, this music I have sitting around. You know, so it's very, very interesting. You know, I mean, how you get inspired, you know, it's just like, wow, I would never, you know, it's almost like for Bernie, he's writing the lyrics almost like poetry kind of thing, or he's writing it that way, you know, I mean, which is a crazy thing. But whereas like with Geezer, with Ozzy would come up with this insane melody and Geezer would write the lyrics going to Ozzy's syllables. You know what I mean? And same thing with Bob Dazin, because I see Bob writing the lyrics. And same thing with Lemmy. When Lemmy wrote the lyrics to Mama, I'm Coming Home, we wrote the song and then Oz had, you know, had the melody. And Lemmy sat and were, you know, because you could listen to the syllables and what you're going to write the line to. Yeah, that's always interesting. But for me, it's always the lyrics are always last. You know, the you got to have the music first, and the music inspires a lyric, a melody. And then I'll think about what I want to sing it about.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned Ozzy and Lemmy, because I was thinking about that today. Like, they seemed like they had a really interesting kinship that obviously led to some really interesting songs. You mentioned Mama, See You on the Other Side. Like, some really interesting songs came out of that partnership.
Yeah, without a doubt.
What was interesting to you about watching that kind of unfold between those two?
I mean, I could only imagine when Geezer was around writing the lyrics, how their chemistry worked. Because Ozzy, obviously, just like how with Bob Daisley and Oz, and then Lemmy with Oz, the same thing, all right, let me hear what the melody is so I can, and I'll put something together for this, So yeah, it was just great, man. Oz was saying when Lemmy wrote the lyrics for Mama, he figured, I'd give him a week or two to come up with something. He was like, Zach, he had it to me before brunch. I gave it to him in the morning, and before noon, he came over, he had like three different sets of lyrics for me.
Yeah, I think at the same point too, you obviously, across the many years that you wrote with Ozzy, you came to understand what the dynamic was there and how to kind of successfully interact with what he was about creatively versus what you could bring to the table. And that was, I'm sure, ever changing based on the situation and the song and, the headspace for the album.
Yeah, even down to Miracle Man, our first song we ever wrote and first riff or whatever. But it's just like, or See You on the Other Side, the music for that. It was just, it's just weird. It's just, I'm just saying, like, me and I mean, it's just a bunch of people that like the same things. So if we're listening to something that's just like, man, you like that? It was never any really that, where if we you played me something, I was like, you actually like this stuff? There was never any of that ever. Because we pretty much everybody, we like the same type of stuff. But we hear something, we go, man, this is awesome, isn't it? And it's just like, yeah, this is killer. Whether we were listening to somebody else, Peter Gabriel or whatever, So you like the same thing. So it's easy. Because I would just come in and just write something, and Oz would go, oh, what's that? I like that. That's really cool or whatever. It's like, oh, cool, Oz, whatever. Just picking meeny, miny, mo. Whatever ones you like, we'll do.
Yeah, Don Henley was just on CBS talking about first song he wrote with Glenn Frey, and that was, for him, Desperado, and that sparks a whole thing. And that's got to be quite a feeling. Like you mentioned Miracle Man. Like, outside of where that song eventually goes and what it does, like, that song is unforgettable. But what was that feeling when you have that first moment where you craft a song like that with Ozzy?
I mean, the chicka-dicka-dan, but I remember the riff down, chicka-dicka-dan, chicka-dicka-dan, dan, chicka-dicka-dan, will stop. And then Oz, and then I'll start singing. I go, yeah, yeah. Oz was, it was pretty amazing. In regard to, it's so funny whenever I read somebody's like, well, Ozzy doesn't even write anything. I'm like, who do you think's coming up with the melodies? I'm like, what are you talking about? Now, obviously, you don't write songs because you don't know what Ozzy's input is on this. Because Oz would always be the first one to go, no, I love the way Geezer's lyrics were. And I love, Bob was a great foil with Oz. They were a great team. And then with Lemmy, and then Dwayne Barron, when he wrote the lyrics for No More Tears and things like that. So it's just like, I'm just saying, but like Ozzy's melodies, it's just like the king of the melody. And like Oz would, very rarely would he, it'd be like 19 out of 20 times, he'd knock it out of the park. It would be very rarely where he'd go, I don't like what I'm singing. Let me work with this thing for a second. It sucks. I don't like it. It very rarely. Usually like Miracle Man, I'm looking for a miracle man, da, 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 I'm looking for, it would be the first thing that would come out of his head. It would be that. Whatever the melody that you hear on the record was pretty much it. So it was pretty mind-blowing. Then you see On the Other Side, all of it. Perry Mason, anything. It was just like My Mom Coming Home, same thing. Time After Time, name it. Road to Nowhere, all that stuff. I was looking back on my life. First thing that came out of his head, and then that would be, he'd have makeshift words and stuff like that. And then, but his melodies, absolutely crushing. Whether it's Love for the Beatles and everything like that, but just the king of the melody.
Well, his love for the Beatles, I was reading an interview that he did here in Cleveland back in 1996 after Osmosis came out, and he said something which I've heard him say, which was, I still haven't made my Sgt. Pepper yet. And thinking about that now, I feel like he's done that. He did make his Sgt. Pepper with any album that you could name off for a number of people in a number of generations. Like, I feel like he did get there.
Yeah. I guess it depends on what you think, but I guess Sgt. Pepper's or whatever, you know, but I mean, I guess for Sabbath, it would be Sabbath, the second album, you know, with all the hits on it, you know, with all the their songs that have to be in the set. And then for Zeppelin, it would be what, Zeppelin 4, but you know, but I mean, for Pink Floyd, what is it going to be? Is it going to be Dark Side of the Moon or Another Brick in the Wall? You know what I mean? They're both, or Wish You Were Here, right? I mean, you know, so they're both all iconic records, you know what I mean? So, yeah, because a lot of people might say the White Album. I mean, as far as experimental, I guess, you know, that would be definitely Sgt. Pepper's.
That's what I was going to ask you as far as this tour goes. And I'll say I understood what Ozzy was saying when he said that, you know, Sgt. Pepper's just such a built-up iconic record. But as far as this tour goes, obviously, if there are people in the world, and maybe there are, that need a gateway into Black Sabbath, they can get that by coming to see this tour and seeing you play with Zach Sabbath. But if you were going to recommend a gateway for somebody to start with Sabbath, where do they start?
I mean, well, I started with, we sold our souls for rock and roll. So you got, that's their greatest hits, right? I mean, you know, so yeah, like, but you know, for me, like I always tell everybody, I was Catholic when I put the needle down on the record. Halfway through the album, I became a full-blown Satanist. And by the time the album ended, I converted back to Catholicism just so I could thank God for creating Black Sabbath. True story. And it was quite the production, but well worth it.
That's fantastic, man. Well, you know, I'm kind of fascinated by what you guys play song-wise, because, of course, you do the stuff that people hear on the radio, but you guys also do a good amount of stuff that is not the radio staples. And then there's things that you've only played like once, like Orchid or Thrill of It All. So I wondered, like, how often are there things that you guys try from the Sabbath body of work that ultimately feel untouchable for whatever reason?
No, you got to put the dark horses in there. I remember for a while we were playing Evil Woman. You know, I mean, they didn't write that one, but that was like the single, you know, because the label wanted them to do that one. Yeah, well, Black Sabbath, Evil Woman, you know, more evil. But I love their version of it, Dan, you know what I mean?
We did a whole run of shows with Zach Sabbath last fall. You're doing double duty on this upcoming tour. How, this is something that you've been doing on an ongoing basis. How did the passing of Ozzy kind of change the tone of doing these shows for you playing this material?
Well, it is pretty, I mean, it is pretty awesome. I mean, in regard to the people, you know, because chanting Ozzy's name, you know, it's like, you know, the Ozzy. You know, we got him chanting Oz, you know, every gig. So, no, it's just a beautiful thing. Ozzy's energy and his power's there. And it's just a way to celebrate his life and celebrate his greatness. Just, you know, I mean, it's just like when we're out there, when I'm doing Experience Hendrix and Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Eric Johnson, Eric Gales, when we're all out there rolling and celebrating Jimmy's, how much he's touched everybody's life. And then you got same thing with Pantera Celebration. Seeing how, you know, how many people have so many beautiful memories attached to this, these songs and what the music means to them, how it inspires them and what a beautiful, special place it has in your life. So that's the way I look at all of it. Every time when we're playing Randy Rhoads' stuff live with Oz, you're celebrating Randy's life and his greatness.
Well, it's pretty appropriate that Ozzy the Boss gets the closing song on this record, and you talked about it a little bit, but I'm sure that was an experience, because you've said that you had the music first, that was something that you had, but it's kind of an interesting moment when you realize you want to write something with Ozzy, and the idea that paired up with that music is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I had the music sitting around, and then I wrote the lyrics with when we got back after laying Ozzy to rest. I sat in the library. And I just was looking at a book of them, and I just listened to the music, and I just wrote the lyrics right there. So, the solo on that song, you know, because I use all my Wild Audio guitars now ever since 2016. I've been, you know, since we started the company. No, Adam Fuller, who does the records with us, Adam, you know, engineers them and mixes them with us. He was just like, Zaggy, you should play the Grail on this one, you know, for the solo. Considering it was the first song I wrote Miracle Man on. And this will be the last thing, a tribute to the Boss. But yeah, so the solo on that song is on that guitar.
Fantastic.
I got all my Gibsons and my Epis. If I want to noodle on them from time to time to take a trip down memory lane, I got them. But you know, but that the solo's on the Grail, though.
Well, Zach, we're looking forward to the tour. I'll let you run, man, but thanks always for the time. Thanks for bringing the guys with you for the interview today.
Yes, Humongous and the Warrior, they're saying they had a great time talking to you as well.
All right, man. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
All right, my brother. I'll talk to you in a bit, buddy.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR Podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.